The hum of the industrial HVAC system usually grounds me, a low-frequency reminder that I'm the one who keeps this logistics empire breathing, but today it sounds like a death rattle. I'm staring at the I-9 verification sitting on my dual monitors, the cursor blinking like a warning light against the stark white digital page. Elena Vance. That's the name on the scanned driver's license, a glossy piece of plastic that shouldn't feel like a physical blow to my solar plexus. I'm Sarah Vance. I've been Sarah Vance for 34 years, the last 8 of which I've spent climbing the jagged glass ladder of Vance Global Logistics, proving to every skeptic in the boardroom that I wasn't just the founder's daughter, but the company's backbone. Then she walked in. She didn't just walk in. She drifted into the lobby with a confidence that felt stolen, wearing a trench coat the color of a bruised sky, and carrying a portfolio that looked far too thin for a senior analyst role. My father, Marcus, didn't even wait for the formal introduction. He was already out of his glass-walled office, his hand extended, a smile on his face I haven't seen since the day we landed the transatlantic contract in 19. It wasn't the polite, professional mask he wears for the rest of us. It was a look of recognition, a softening of the jawline that felt like a betrayal of our shared DNA. The office is a hive of whispers now, a collective low-volume buzz that stops the moment I pass the break room. Everyone noticed the eyes first, that specific, piercing shade of flint gray that Marcus passed down to me, the eyes that usually signal a storm is coming. Elena has them too. She sat in the orientation meeting leaning back, her legs crossed at the knee, tapping a Mont Blanc pen against her chin while Marcus walked her through the Q3 projections as if she were a visiting dignitary instead of a mid-level hire. The jokes started by lunch. Someone in accounting asked if we were doing a secret bring your sister to work day, and the laughter that followed had a sharp, jagged edge. I laughed too, because that's what a professional does, but the sound felt like dry leaves catching in my throat. I looked at her across the conference table, and for a split second, she didn't look away. She didn't offer the submissive blink of a new employee. She just watched me, her expression a mirror of my own cold calculation, as if she were measuring the distance between my chair and the head of the table. By 3 o'clock, the technicalities of her onboarding started to feel like a slow-motion car crash. I pulled her personnel file, my fingers trembling slightly as I bypassed the standard HR encryption. One of the perks of being the person who built the system. I told myself I was looking for a discrepancy in her routing numbers or a gap in her employment history. Anything to justify the knot tightening in my chest. Instead, I found a void. Her previous experience was a series of boutique firms that folded 6 months after she joined, her references all redirected to burner-style VoIP numbers that smelled like a professional scrub. But it was the emergency contact that stopped my heart. Usually, it's a spouse or a parent. Elena's was blank, but the address listed for her previous residence was a small town in upstate New York, a place Marcus used to visit every fishing trip throughout the late 90s. I remember those trips. He'd come back smelling of pine and expensive gin, his eyes distant and his temper short. I used to think he just hated coming back to the suburbs. Now, I look at the map on my screen and see a direct line from my childhood abandonment to the woman sitting 3 cubicles away. The internal monologue of my brain is a staccato of panic, a rhythmic pounding that matches the beat of the copier in the hallway. I need to know. I need to see it in writing, or in a photo, or in the way her shadow hits the wall. I waited until the cleaning crew arrived, the smell of lemon-scented floor wax filling the corridors, a sterile mask for the rot I was about to uncover. Marcus's office was locked, but I've had the key since I was 12. It's a heavy brass weight in my pocket, a symbol of a trust I'm about to incinerate. The air in his office is thick with the scent of old leather and the lingering smoke of his evening cigar. I didn't go for the desk. I went for the safe behind the framed original charter, the one he thinks I don't have the combination to. It's August 14th, 91. The day my mother died. He thinks it's an act of devotion. I know it's a graveyard. Inside, there are no gold bars or secret ledgers. There is only a slim, black leather accordion file. My hands are numb as I pull it out, the sound of the elastic snap echoing like a gunshot in the silent room. I flipped through the papers, birth certificates, wire transfer receipts to an account in a name I didn't recognize, and then the photos. They weren't digital prints. They were old-school, glossy snapshots with the dates printed in orange ink on the bottom right. 1996. Marcus is younger, his hair still dark, standing on a porch that looks like it belongs in a dream. Beside him is a woman with a wild mane of blonde hair and a smile that looks like it could light up a dark room. And in her arms is a baby with flint gray eyes. I felt the floor tilt beneath me, the heavy oak desk the only thing keeping me upright. There were dozens of them. Marcus at a playground. Marcus at a graduation. I didn't know existed. Marcus holding a younger version of the woman who just took over the North End desk. The realization isn't a wave. It's a tide that pulls everything I thought I knew out to sea. This isn't just a workplace entanglement. It's a hostile takeover of my entire reality. He didn't just bring her here to work. He brought her here to replace the version of me that failed to keep him happy. He's been funding a shadow life for 3 decades while I was the one staying late to fix the supply chain. The one holding his hand through his triple bypass. The one who sacrificed a marriage because the company needed me more than a husband did. I was the loyal soldier, and she was the hidden prize. The way he looked at her this morning wasn't pride in a new hire. It was the relief of a man finally bringing his real family home. I heard the heavy click of the door behind me. I didn't turn around. I didn't need to. The scent of that expensive gin drifted into the room, followed by the soft rhythmic tapping of a Mont Blanc pen against a palm. Elena didn't say a word. She didn't need to. I could feel her flint gray gaze burning into the back of my neck. A silent confirmation that the photos in my hand weren't a secret she was trying to hide, but a weapon she had been waiting for me to find. She wanted me to know. She wanted me to feel the ground crumble. I turned slowly. The photos fanned out in my hand like a losing poker shift. She was leaning against the doorframe, her trench coat gone, wearing a silk blouse that cost more than my first car. She looked at the pictures, then at me, and her lips curled into a smile that didn't reach her eyes. She told me that Marcus always said I was the smart one, the one who would figure it out eventually. Her voice a low, melodic rasp that sounded far too much like my own. She walked toward the desk, her movements fluid and predatory, and picked up the birth certificate I had dropped. She didn't look like a sister. She looked like an executioner. The silence in the room became a vacuum, sucking the oxygen out of my lungs until I was gasping for air that felt like lead. She leaned over the desk, her face inches from mine, and whispered that the board meeting on Friday was going to be an interesting one. She mentioned that Marcus had already signed over the voting shares he'd been promising me for years, only the name on the document wasn't Sarah. It was a name that had been scrubbed from the record until today. I looked at the shadow she cast on the wall, and for the first time in my life, I didn't see my father's daughter. I saw a ghost who had finally decided to stop haunting the margins and start running the house. The HVAC system groaned and cut out, leaving us in a silence so profound it felt like the end of the world, or at least the end of mine. She didn't leave. She just sat in Marcus's chair, the leather creaking under her weight, and gestured for me to close the safe. She said we had a lot of work to do if we were going to keep this in the family. Her gray eyes locking onto mine with a cold, predatory light that told me the real war hadn't even started yet. I looked at the door, the exit sign glowing a mocking red, and realized that even if I walked out now, I'd be leaving with nothing but the name she was already wearing better than I ever did.